Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For those of you who are new to us, every offseason, we've had a series with Coach Joel Nellis. He's the head football coach at Brookfield Central in Wisconsin. Just finished his first year as the head football coach and was also coach of the year there. So he's doing an excellent job there. He's done an excellent job for us on the Home Team podcast, where he puts a focus on the home team, your home team. How do you take care of your family? How do you prioritize life around football rather than the other way around? And he does a great job of finding guests who have really learned a way to be successful in this profession and at the same time not hurt a family or tear a family apart. And just coming back from AFCA, this is a part of the year where there's a lot of changes being made. There's, you know, a lot of guys I talked to told me they have some big opportunities, but decisions at the same time, and they have to think about how it's going to affect their family, how they're going to be able to adjust. So this game does affect all of us in different ways, even at the lower levels, at the high school, or even small college level. While the changes might not be huge, we still need to consider how we're going to prioritize all the things that have to be important to our life and have to come before football. So I'm going to kick it over to Coach Nellis again for our first episode of the 2020 Home Team Series.
Hello, coaches, and welcome to the Home Team Podcast, where football coaches from around the country provide the coaching community with improvements to their game plans for winning as a husband and a father. Today, we're going to speak with Coach Brad Dixon. Coach Dixon is the head football coach, head boys track coach, strength and conditioning coordinator, and physical education teacher at Camp Point Central High School in West Central Illinois. Coach Dixon has been coaching football for the past 17 years, including the last nine as head football coach at Camp Point Central. During those 9 years, the Panthers have won 6 conference championships, went to the IHSA playoffs 9 straight seasons, made a quarterfinal appearance, 2 semifinal appearances prior to this past year's state championship appearance. The Panthers also have the third most wins at 85 in Illinois' Class 1A during those 9 seasons. 3 years ago, Coach Dixon gave up coaching high school boys basketball after 13 seasons to become the head boys track coach at Camp Point Central. Over the past 3 years, Coach Dixon has made rest and speed the priority in every athlete he trains and has had a major impact on how he runs his high school football and track programs. He is also RPR Level 2 certified and consults with many football programs across the country about RPR implementation, training philosophies, and practice organization. Coach Dixon is also a registered IHSA basketball official, keeping him busy during all 3 seasons. He has been married for 7 years to his beautiful wife, Allison, and they have 2 children, Autumn and Christian. They currently reside in Camp Point, Illinois. Coach Dixon, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, it's I'm thankful that I get an opportunity to talk to you guys, and I'm looking forward to it.
Let's jump right in and start by talking about the stars of your home team, beginning with your wife. How did you meet this special woman?
Well, kind of interesting is, back when I was a much younger coach, I got started when I was 19, and so I was, I think, 23 when I graduated college and got my first big boy job. I'm actually teaching. I was coaching through college. Before that, actually, she was an older sister of a player on our team, and so it was kind of funny because he wasn't real fond of it at the beginning of it because, you know, it's you really have to date my coach kind of thing like that. And so she was already into football, and that's kind of how that relationship started. And you know, me being a transplant here in Camp Point, I had never heard of Camp Point growing up. It's a few hours from my hometown. So, you know, if it wasn't for me getting the job opportunity down here, you know, I wouldn't have met her and we would have never got married. So pretty thankful for the job opportunity I guess for her having a brother on the team back then.
No question. What's a character trait or quality that she has that makes her so special to you?
I just think she's an extremely hard worker. She's a dental hygienist and works full time. And, you know, even when she's off of one job, she picks up an extra day or an extra afternoon in another job. And to do that and then, you know, be kind of more responsible for our two kids. We've got a soon-to-be 5-year-old and a just-turned 3-year-old to then be responsible after maybe a Friday afternoon of working to get those kids all ready to go and maybe travel 2 hours to a Friday night away game and then travel home with them and probably get them to bed and all those things before I get home is, you know, pretty special. And it always, you know, we talk amongst coaches, it takes a different breed to want to buy into that type of coach's wife life. But, you know, she dives in full head of steam and she's a huge fan of what we do and understands, you know, that there's going to be a more time commitment on her part. And she does all that while working full time. And you know, that's tough. But, you know, I really admire her for being able to juggle those things and give me the opportunity to coach other people's kids and sometimes spend more time with them than my own kids.
Let's talk about your kids, the other members of your starting lineup. What are their names, ages, and what makes each of them so unique or special to you?
Well, we had a daughter first, and the cool thing is we never found out, you know, what we were having ahead of time. We had them put a picture in an envelope, and just in case we ran across a weak moment, I guess, where we thought we needed to know. But, you know, in both instances, we were surprised, so that was fun. But you never know what to expect when it's your first one. Obviously, and we had our daughter first, and it was her name is Autumn. And it was a 30-hour labor. It was an induction. Oh, so we went in on after midnight and whatever 30 hours is, we didn't have her for a full day. And then I think we had her at about 5 in the morning on the following day. So it was quite the labor process. But, you know, probably the craziest thing that happened with her was actually during the season when she was about 1.5. She got something, you know, she got these lymph nodes and you know, this crazy rash and bloodshot eyes and high fevers and we didn't really know what was going on, and we ended up in Children's Hospital in St. Louis, oh, you know, almost for an entire week for what they eventually called Kawasaki's disease, which is kind of when they don't exactly know, you know, what it is, and they don't really know what causes it, but if you meet these, you know, 4 or 5 criteria. So it was a pretty scary time. She's about 1.5 and it was during the football season, but you know, she made a full recovery and you know, that was just kind of the way she perseveres. She's extremely smart and, you know, loves to cheer and do those types of things. And then my son's kind of the bull in the china shop. He's always tinkering with something and his name's Christian. He just turned 3 and we just came off of a vacation over Christmas where he turned 3 on the beach in Hilton Head, South Carolina, so that was cool. You know, he loves to go out and play ball and do those things, and so it was neat to have a boy. You know, I think that's every dad's dream, but you know, I think for those dads that are leery about having a girl, there's something special about that too, and we're blessed to have, you know, 2 healthy children now, and you know, that we were able to get through that little scare with my daughter, and there was a lot of support from the coaching world. In fact, the day we brought her home from Children's, we received a bear and some balloons from the team that we were going to play that Friday night. And I thought that was very special and just a very classy move. And it just kind of shows what this game's all about and what coaching is all about.
Absolutely. Next, we're moving into a section titled We Make the Call and discuss how your family has navigated some of your important decisions throughout your career. Obviously, the situation you explained, how you met your wife, she knew you were a coach, knew you were passionate about coaching. Do you guys have any, you know, talks about how that might look when you're married and maybe if you wanted to stay at the high school level or pursue something else, or, you know, how'd you guys talk about that career move for yourselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you never know how it's quite going to unfold. You never know how, you know, at the time I was an assistant, you know, and when we first started dating before I eventually took over the head coaching job, and I came, you know, very, very close to taking another head coaching job before I got the one here and where I'm at in Camp Point. You know, it was a decision that we were going to pull the trigger on the other job, and this one happened to come open last minute and kind of changed, I guess, our trajectory. But that was an interesting time that we were kind of talking through, you know, whether I wanted to move from, I mean, this being her hometown and her brother at that time was going to be a senior on our team. And but we, you know, things worked out in our favor. And then, you know, we've been I guess, fortunate to have some success here at Camp Point. And you know, when that happens and you get some more friends in the coaching world or the teaching world, you know, other people come calling, and there's been other opportunities over time that, you know, some of them where they've been very, very lucrative offers or just enticing things, you know, where we've had to sit down and really think about, you know, what's best for our family. And you know, for us, it's about where we feel the most comfortable, where we, you know, have the most family. And I love my assistant coaches and just the community that we live in. And even though we've had some of those, you know, hard decisions, you know, we've stuck it out here, and this is the place we want to be. And obviously we've both agreed in those instances to make that decision. And you know, through prayer and lots of thoughts, we've done it. And that's, you know, kind of where we're at this point. And we're both very happy with, you know, the current situation we're in. And, you know, that's kind of where we're at. We haven't went out and pursued jobs. And you know, that I won't say that would never happen, you know, but at this time we're very happy and with where we're at. And we continue to talk about how blessed we are.
That's awesome. Is there anything you looked at? You know, you obviously know where the jobs you were thinking of applied to. Is there, you know, guys I think are always on the hunt, and some guys are, some guys aren't, you know, but as the more you do, the more attention you attract. Is there anything that's you looked at and been like, man, is there a situation you're glad you didn't take? And obviously you're thankful for where you are now, but you know, is there any traps maybe you could help some guys avoid, things that maybe, you know, it sounded really too good to be true and it turned out to be, you don't have to mention any names, but is there anything you kind of look at like, oh man, I'm glad I stayed out of that situation, or I'm glad, you know, we didn't make that jump?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a couple things that I've learned over time is, you know, you've got to look at the big picture of things. You can't just look at maybe the record or the success someone's had over the last couple of years. I think we can all agree that talent wins, and if you can get that talent in the right spot and keep them healthy, you can win a lot. But there's a lot of other things that go into that. And you know, coaching and decision-making and administration and those things. And I think coaches definitely need to look at the big picture, you know, who you're going to have with you. And, you know, I think sometimes we're quick to try to jump into a head coaching job, and, you know, we'll figure out the details of it after we get a certain place. But, you know, if you're happy where you're at and with people that you trust, and maybe you're an assistant, and the next job, you don't know who's going to be on, you know, have your back, or who you're going to be able to count on and delegate to, I think that's definitely a trap situation, because you may end up having to do it all yourself. And you know, that's not going to be good for your family or good for your team. And so I think you need to understand that, who's hiring the assistants and where are they coming from? How many of them can you get in the building and so forth? And I think that's key. And then just, you know, what other successes at the school and the other programs are, you know, are they, do they support each other? You know, does the basketball coach support three sport athletes? Does the football coach, the previous football coach, do that? Does the baseball coach encourage people to do that? Or is it kind of every sport for themselves? I think, you know, that makes it extremely tough and competitive and a recipe for disaster if you get in one of those school districts where, you know, there's not that cohesion between the coaching staffs. And those are things that, you know, I think are the most important. Usually, you know, the staff that you can hire, and just, you know, the connection between the multiple sports in that school district and you know, obviously the community support.
Bouncing back into the parenting side of things, you know, consistency and discipline is a big thing in parenting. With being apart as much as you are from your wife, obviously during the seasons, how do you and your wife communicate and deal with discipline issues with your children?
You know, I think the discipline we have at these young ages are small things. You know, I think the true test will be as they get older and want to go do things. You know, at this point, they're, like I said, my daughter's not quite five and my son just turned three. You know, it's little things. It's not listening at home and sometimes things like that. So, you know, usually a simple text, hey, your son is not doing this, or he is doing this, you know, and so we're on board with things of being respectful and saying please and thank you and cleaning up after yourself and things like that. And those are things that we try to hammer home. And, you know, so if there is a situation where we're debating how to handle something, like right now, just my son and potty training, and we've been working on that for quite some time and how we want to handle that, we talk about it. And you know, we both try to do our part, but, you know, we share any of the, like you said, any of the big decisions, especially, you know, if you go through a situation like my daughter did, and, you know, where she's in the hospital, you got to lean on each other in those times, and you can't put one parent against the other. You need to make sure you're on the same page and not sending mixed messages and things like that. So, like I said, I haven't, you know, fortunately, but had to deal with a lot of discipline issues at the young ages that my kids are. But, you know, I think as those things come up in the future, you know, we're on board with our, you know, philosophies and beliefs on how we want to raise our kids. So I think that's important, you know, to set those ground rules of what we believe in. And you know, obviously we'll talk through issues as they arise and come to consensus, you know, that we can both agree on and accept and support.
Nice. The third series of questions involve what we'll call clock management and how you spend your time to blend family and football. And I think this is really one of the reasons that I wanted to bring you on. You know, I had a chance to meet you at the Track and Field Consortium in Chicago, and I thought, you know, you talked about beating the coaches, and I think for some of our listeners have no idea what the hell that even means. We probably need to start back with what feed the cats means, and maybe just a little bit behind that philosophy in terms of training athletes, and then maybe we can dive into kind of how you've taken that to the coaching level. So can you just give us like a quick overview of what feed the cats means in terms of training football players as it relates to that?
Yeah, you know, I think we were all, you know, coaches. We all came up through a militaristic or more, if 2 hours is good, then 2.5 is better. And let's see how much we can throw at these kids and how tired we can make them and how, you know, tough we can make them to win in the fourth quarter mentality that we all were kind of, like I said, brought up through. And the way I coached for 10 plus years of my early part of my coaching career. And honestly, when I first started coaching track four or five years ago, it really made me understand, you know, what intensity and trying to maximize your reps with as little volume as possible to keep your track athletes healthy. And fortunately, I ran into Coach Howler and, you know, through the track world and got to reading his Feed the Cats and how he decided in track he was going to quit running and start sprinting and try to, you know, as he says, go to the finish line, you know, 80% in shape and 100% healthy and, you know, try to get his work done in a shorter amount of time and a more intense amount of time. And so we applied that to football. We wanted to, you know, instead of thinking how much can we give our athletes, we wanted to try to find that effective dose or that minimum effective dose that we could, you know, train our football team to be able to be successful while also monitoring their, you know, health and you know, we cut out conditioning and we went all in on this sprint-based, you know, just effective training that has nothing to do with that old school military, and really wanted to focus on, you know, the football side of things. And hey, if this doesn't make us better, we're going to get rid of it. We're going to let our kids go home early, and we're going to try to maximize an hour and 45 minutes of practice time. We're going to give them the weekends off, and we're going to try to make football fun again and not make it a grind, you know, as some of these people have really bought into this grind mentality. And so that's kind of where the football side of things came from. And so what I found was that more and more coaches were buying into that, you know, with their athletes. And there's still a lot, it's still kind of a new phenomenon, I would say. But then I was seeing all these crazy schedules and hours that these assistant coaches would tell me they were putting in, and nights and mornings and weekends and all these different things. And so I thought it'd be good at Chicago to kind of talk about how, you know, we try to use that same less is more mentality with our coaching staff. You know, I talked about my young kids, all my assistants have kids. We've got them from, I think, 8 is the oldest down to a 1-year-old who are one of my assistants that had a baby actually the Monday of the state championship week, or the Monday or the Tuesday 2 years ago in 2018, which was pretty crazy. Kind of snuck her in there right after the semifinal win and before the state championship. But we just can't put in 50 hours a week doing football. We just can't with our families. And you know, I think as coaches with the technology that we have, you know, if you're not maximizing those pieces of technology and you're still forcing your coaches to come in for hours and hours and sit in rooms and input data into the computer or watch hours and hours of film and create these huge lavish game plans, you know, I think you're overvaluing, you know, the coaching side of things and undervaluing the talent side of things. And so we just try to, you know, come up with a game plan and scheme that fits our personnel, and it's something that we know and we can do well. And, you know, we game plan and we do it, I guess, on our own time, and we do it where we don't have to meet on the weekends by a simple Google Doc where we put together offensive and defensive game plans, and we put all this stuff on Google Drive, and we give coaches the freedom to be able to input their stuff when they need to on the weekends, whether that's one coach that can do stuff on a Saturday morning, you know, because of his schedule, another coach that needs a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday evening, you know, but there's not a set time where we say, okay, guys, we need you to carve out 5 or 6 hours out of your Sunday and come into the coach's office where we sit down and do this. You know, we just don't feel that we need to with huddle and all this technology, and we can communicate with each other without taking all this time away from our family. And we purchase the huddle assist that inputs all those, you know, those down and distance and all those things. And we try to use all of that to our advantage. And we try to keep our scheme simple. You know, our kids understand where they fit in our defense. You know, it's multiple, but it's multiple more on the outside than it is on the inside. We teach our guys, you know, basic principles of what we expect them to do, you know, based on what they see. And offensively, we're a wing T base. We have, you know, 4 or 5 run schemes. And we do some different things with the backfield that kind of dress it up. But, you know, we pretty much know what we want to do, how we, you know, over the 12 or 13 years I've been here, how we want to attack certain defenses and such. And so, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel. The coaches that I have, the two main ones have been with me for 10 plus years. And the other guy that we have is a former player under our system. So, you know, we're not out there trying to implement something new. I guess if you were doing that, you may need to spend a little bit more time. But what I think you'll find is that your coach's time when they are there is going to be much more valuable, because they don't feel like they're bogged down by the end of the season, and they feel refreshed. They feel appreciated that you tell them that practice is going to be over and they're going to be able to pick their kids up from daycare, and you're not going to make them come in on Sundays and do 25 contact days in the summer and those types of things. I think it pushes them to give you more, because they know that you respect, you know, their time. And so I think it's something, a message that I've really tried to get out over the last probably year or so. You can do it. There are obviously multiple ways to win. There are people that win state championship games by meeting for 60 hours, you know, but it's possible to win games by doing, you know, less than that. And I think as coaches, you need to about the things that you're doing and the things that you're requiring of your assistants, and really sit down and create a plan based around what you're doing and whether it's actually, you're actually seeing it be effective on Friday nights. And if you can't make that direct connection, then you might try cutting it out and just see what happens. And I think what you'll find out is that your kids and your coaches will be much more rejuvenated and much more willing to fight on as the season goes on, instead of kind of in that grind mentality where you're just trying to get through the end of the year.
Coach, I think there's a couple things that we can kind of jump into or keep talking about as it relates to this clock management and maybe coming to that conclusion of, you know, could I really afford to cut some things out? What do you see as the biggest, probably initial barrier for coaches that may stop them from wanting to pursue this thought, you know, this reduced schedule or reduced, maybe it's not even, I think the big point you had to make was, it's not that you weren't watching film, you're just doing it on your own time, right? You're allowed to work as hard as you want on the time that you have with what your family needs are, but maybe you're just not doing it together and not calling guys in. You know, what do you think is a initial hurdle and could help coaches maybe get started into this that they might have to overcome first in their own head before moving forward?
You know, the biggest thing is no one wants to lose doing less. And so, yep. You know, we kind of go so far in the opposite direction. You know, we're scared that, you know, if we lose a Friday night game, you know, we it's because we didn't watch that extra hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours of film. We didn't meet on Sunday. And so I think, you know, it's hard to swim upstream. It's much easier to just swim downstream. And I think Coach Holler said it best before, you know, if Nick Saban is doing it and he's staying in the office till midnight, and that's what you're doing on a Thursday night before your game or on Saturday or whatever, then you have a little bit of comfort in the fact that you're doing it or trying to do it like the best in the country are trying to do it. But if you're taking Saturday and Sunday off and you lose on a Friday night, you know, it's hard sometimes because people are going to say, well, maybe if you'd have came in on Sunday and you guys would have met as a staff, you would have won. And, you know, I think that goes into, you know, you've got to be comfortable with what you're doing. And we didn't come to this in at the beginning. I mean, I've been coaching now I've been a head coach for 9 years, and it's been a progression. We used to meet on Sundays, and then we met on Monday mornings before school. We used to practice on Saturday mornings with film. You know, we used to do 2 weeks of camp, and then we did, you know, at nights, and then we did a morning and a night, and then we cut it to just a morning session. And so it's been a gradual progression, you know, but that's what I mean by taking an inventory of your program and really trying to look at each piece and saying, okay, when we come in on Sundays for 4 hours, what are we getting done? Is the first hour or two complaining about, you know, Johnny, Jimmy, and Bobby not doing what they were supposed to do on Friday night, and that's why you lost? Well, if that's what half of your meeting time is, or the majority of it, or talking about who you're going to replace them with, then you're really not getting anything done effectively in terms of your game plan. And so I think sometimes by being able to sit at your own time, your own leisure, and look at your film, you know, without somebody else's maybe negativity, because we all get in that point when we don't have success, you know, we start looking and I don't want to say place blame, but we kind of do on different aspects of who's not doing what they're supposed to do. And so, you know, we lose sight of the technique parts, and we like to sometimes just come back to, well, it's just his effort's not there, or, you know, he's just not going hard enough. And we just, as coaches, we have this thing where we come back to that. And so our motive, our mentality is, well, we got to work harder then. So if we're not getting it done, then we need to practice an extra half hour. We need to, you know, we're going to start bringing them in. Or as coaches, we're not getting it done, so we need to start meeting on Sundays so we can. And we really don't figure out, okay, why? You know, why is that one kid or whoever, that group of people, or why are we, you know, rushing for 2 yards of carry? And my guess would be it's not because, you know, they're not trying, because most kids aren't going to go out for something they're not going to try. And so you've already weeded out those kids that are trying. It's either a technique thing, a misconception of what you expect them to do, they physically can't get the job done yet at their age, whatever the scenario is, and that's where your focus needs to be. If you have to meet as a staff to think about those things, then more power to you. If you can find a time. But for the situation that we're in, you know, we feel like we can get what we need done, you know, like I said, on our own. Everyone has, it's not that we're getting out of things. It's that I trust my offensive coordinator by Sunday night, you know, and we've communicated throughout the weekend through text or Googled, whatever the scenario is, different plays. He may say, hey, check out play 52. You know, our buck sweep will be really good if we see this front, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's real simple. So when I get a minute, I'll take a look at that play. I'm like, oh, I love it. You know, and so he's doing that stuff. But I know on Sunday night that game plan's going to be written and together where I'm going to have a chance to look at it, you know. And so I have that trust. I have trust in our position coaches. When I create, you know, the practice schedule on Google Sheets, I know that they're going to go in and populate their specific individual groups with the drills that they need or think that we need to get done. And, you know, we can do that without having to spend all this time. And then I know some people meet for an hour before they ever go out to practice. You know, we just, and maybe it's because we've been doing it long enough together as a group, but we don't feel that we need to do that. And so that's, like I said, that's kind of the hurdle it is to overcome. You've got to figure out, are you willing to surrender yourself to this mentality, you know, no matter what people are going to say, no matter what the team down the street's doing, if you truly believe that it's what's best for your program. And for us, we believe it wholeheartedly, and we'll never go back, you know. And are we going to win every game? No, we're not. We got beat in the second round this year in a hard-fought game against a really good team, and that's life, and that happens, you know. But our kids enjoyed it. You know, they never once felt that they weren't prepared. You know, we were as healthy for 2 years in a row where we dressed our entire roster for the most part, varsity-wise, for the entire season, and we've put our best product out there, and that's what we feel gives us the best chance to be successful.
Coach, did you ever have a moment in your time doing this as you were transitioning where, you know, you looked and you're like, oh, and then you just think to yourself, you know what, that had nothing to do with more time. You know, did you ever have to talk, did you find yourself talking yourself off that ledge a little bit? I guess I'll illustrate an example. A good friend of mine, Coach Leonard at the University of Wisconsin, was there the year they lost to Penn State in the championship game, and we had a conversation, and, you know, they had three jump balls in the second half that they one-on-one balls and didn't come down with it, you know. And I talked to him like, you know what, we talk about this all the time. Like, I don't think an extra hour of film would have helped, you know, each day would have helped your guy come down with that ball. Do you ever have those moments where you look back and you're like, you know what, I don't know if I could have watched 8 more hours of film and the outcome would have changed, or, you know, we were better off not having done too much that week. You know, is there anything specifically you can point to as you've been going through this?
Yeah. I mean, I think any time that you lose a game, you go back and you look at, you know, what were the key things, you know, this past season, one of the big plays of the game was a 30-15 where we didn't get into the pass drop where we needed to, where we should have been at linebacker, you know, so a drill that we had done, you know, all throughout the year, and one that we knew how to do it, but this was a very heavy run team, and it was a good play action situation, and that, you know, that happens, and you think, okay, did we work on this enough this week? Did we hammer home, you know, this concept and all those things? And I think you come back to, you know, when you look at what they're trying to do, and in this particular game, they had rushed for over 400 or 500 yards the week before, you know, all state running back, and we made them earn every yard, and I think they ended up with a little over 200 yards on 60 some carries or 55 carries or whatever it was, you know, 4 yards pop. We had a couple turnovers that happened. They had some kids make some plays, and that's it. And at the end of the game, you know, it's not that we are content that we lost, you know, but I felt like, you know, our kids played well, and we just came up short, and, you know, and they went on and won the next week by, I think, 40 running clock. And you know, they came up short in the semifinals to another team in a close game. And that was just it. You know, they were a good team that we drew in the second round. And you know, I think when you break down most of your losses, you know, it has to do with, like I said, talent. You know, sometimes, like for us this year, you know, we had a 5'8", 140-pound sophomore left guard. We had a 5'11", 160-pound right guard. You know, we had some. We weren't very big this year on our offensive line. In a lot of other years, we've been 215 there, 220. You know, those kids played their butts off, but there were times, like in this game, that the guys across from them were 225 pounds. And you know, we moved the ball. You know, we just didn't finish some drives. And I think that the guys did everything that they could do, and we just weren't, you know, just wasn't in the cards for us. And you know, I think if you go back and look at most of your losses, I think you can say, hey, you know, that guy over there made a heck of a play. You know, I was just looking back at the highlight of the Texans quarterback, Deshaun Watson, and the play he made. Yep. on that blitz. I mean, you look at that, and you, two guys hit him. Could you have done another tackling drill? Could you have done another, you know, pass rush lane drill with those guys? And would that have made a difference in that moment? maybe. But that dude is a dude, and he made a play, and it was a phenomenal play. And, yeah, you can go back and look at that, but I think you just got to chalk it up that was a phenomenal play. Sometimes you make those plays. Sometimes the other team does. You know, were your guys having fun? Did they play it for each other? Were your guys healthy? You know, did you have seven of your starters sitting out because of the, you know, you practiced for 2.5 hours every night and they were all hurt and soft or whatever word you want to use? And if you can say, you know, that your guys were healthy, they were out there and they knew what they were doing, they were playing fast, they were having fun, you know, I think at the end of the day, you just got to accept the results that happened, and maybe through those losses, you can learn a few other technique things or adjustments, which we've done over the years. We always tell our kids, guys, the reason that we teach whatever we're teaching this particular way is because somebody showed us either the way we were doing it was wrong or their way was better. And they either beat us with it or whatever. It really is. You know, why do we take on this block this way? Why do we down block a certain way? Why do we run this play? Because it's good. And someone proved to us in some game over the years that this was really good. Or this, what we did was not what we should do. They may have exposed us. And that's how you learn. You learn through those experiences. And, you know, we've just tried to, through the years, you know, create our program through, you know, those experiences that we've had. And we take those into every season and adjust them as necessary. You know, this year, you know, we're a power run team, but we couldn't run downhill as much just because of the size of the guys that we had. So we had to get to the edge. We had to pull. We had to down block. And we had to do different things, you know, within our scheme this year than maybe we've had to do in other years. And so those are tweaks that you make, you know. But like I said, that doesn't require, you know, 15 hours of film and all these different things. You know. So I think you got to have a system that allows you to feel comfortable with your preparation, and you got to kind of cut out that outside noise. And, you know, I think when you look at it at the end of the day, like I said, if your guys are in the right position, you know, if they're healthy and if they're having fun and playing for each other, you know, that's all you can ask for.
Absolutely. Talked about the, you know, keeping the main thing, which is, you know, family. And you talked about how you, you know, kind of question that sometimes when you see the schedules that some guys keep. So I know, love their families, you know, they're just dedicated to what they do and they maybe don't know any better. Have you got any feedback from the wives and the families about, you know, as you've made this change over the years and any positive things that you could share with coaches that the families have really appreciated as you've kind of made this transition?
Yeah, they, you know, they all, like, and we're all, our families are close. We get together a lot, you know, throughout the season and the off season, so forth, Christmas time, those types of things. Our kids hang out together, you know, and they appreciate it. You know, they appreciate the fact that their time's not wasted, you know, and I think the coaches, I had one of the things I talked about in one of my clinic talks was that had a college coach message me and just tell me how much time he was wasting in his office because the head coach expected him to be there, but he really had nothing to do. And I try to strive on the fact of, you know, guys, this is what we need done. You know, let's get it done. And when you get it done, that's all we need to do. We don't need to spend all this, you know, you don't need to just appear to be busy doing things. And I think they appreciate when that, you know, they have a job to do when they get it done. You know, that then they're free to do what they need to be, and I'm not keeping them around, and they have the freedom to go to things on the weekends, or if, hey, you know, my sons need to come out here after school, can they come to practice? Yes. Hey, I've got, you know, my kid's sick, I'm gonna have to jet out early, or I've got this or whatever. You know, take care of your family, do what you need to do. And you know, our coaches do that. They picked me up that week. My daughter was in children's. They ran all the practices. We still communicated practice plans. I watched the film, you know, when my family was sleeping. But they handled it. You know, they handled their business. And so I think, you know, they did that because they knew and that, you know, I cared about them and I cared about their time. And I think that's why they're still coaching, even though they've got those young families. Because they feel like they can still coach and be a dad, and I'm not making them choose. And when I say that, I don't think anyone has bad intentions, you know, but like, it goes back to, like I said, no one wants to go down if we're going to go down, we're going to go down swinging and fighting. And if that means, you know, 3-hour practices and weekends, you know, it's not because they don't want to go home. It's what they think they need to do to be successful, you know, and we've all been there before, you know, and it's hard to kind of try to see the opposite of that. And it's, I don't think it's till you step back and look at it about how much maybe it has affected your family, and, you know, when you're gone that much, and you know, if you're missing your kids' sporting events and things like that. The other video I shared was Oklahoma State's Mike Gundy answering questions yep. about missing the flight. And I didn't know who they were playing. It's a regular season game. They were playing on yep. Saturday. They had their workouts and, you know, their meetings, everything on Friday morning or Friday. They boarded a plane to go stay wherever they were staying. And, you know, Mike Gundy chose to go to his son's state semifinal game. He was a senior there in the semifinals. His, you know, his lead assistant went with the team, and, you know, they just had a team meal, and then they went to their dorms, and he came in later that night, and they were questioning, you know, was it, you know, does that affect your team? And I just found it crazy that he had to answer questions about going to see his son as a senior playing in the state semifinals. That would be no question.
Yeah.
You know, we were ready when our assistant coach was going to have a baby, you know, whether that was going to be semifinal Saturday or the state championship, you know, if he had to be gone, he had to be gone, you know, and that's life.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, you'll see that your family will be, the families will be so much more bought into your program if you respect their time, and they'll be so much more willing to give of their time if they know that you're not, you know, asking them for all of it. So the time that you do have them together will be much more productive and I guess much more intense or valuable at that time. And, you know, and the whole time, you know, you're promoting that family atmosphere. You're actually living it out at home.
Coach, do you think this philosophy rubs off well on, you know, a positive impact on your players? Because obviously you're being smart with their time within the field. And, you know, do you think that they see maybe something different from you guys in terms of, you know, more spirit about you, better morale in the program, also dedicating your time to your families and your kids? I mean, do you actively take the time to talk to them about how it carries over, not just from what they do at practice, but how you're managing your time at home? You know,
Absolutely.
So you can kind of be a model for them of what, you know, they should be focusing on in their life.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think through our exit interview stuff and the questions I've asked our players, you know, they understand it because we preach it to them that we're not going to waste their time, and we're going to cut out things that don't help us be successful or, you know, be better on Friday night. And so, you know, we talk about that in our own families. We talk about surrounding ourselves with, you know, good people and being mindful of the people that you hang around with and things like that and the choices you make. And you know, just like any coaches do, we try to teach them to be better dads and so forth. And so when they see me break out and they say, guys, you know, I've got a jet today. I've got 6 minutes to sprint off this field and go get my kids from daycare. I love you, but I can't stick around today. I think they appreciate the fact that I'm giving them my time, but I'm also, you know, going to take care of my family the way that I need to. And you know, I think hopefully, and we've seen it with guys that have come through our program, obviously, you know, there's, you know, not everything's roses. I'm not sitting here telling you that everyone's came through our program has always done the right things. Obviously there are mistakes that happen. You know, you try to teach them through that, but we're proud of the product of the kids that we have that come out of our program and the ones that stay in our community and become productive. And obviously, we try to get as many of those guys to come back and help us coach as we can, because, you know, as every year passes, we get a little bit older and the gap between us coaches gets a little wider from the players. So we need those young coaches and, you know, those guys that have played for us to continue to come back and help us out and be good role models. But, you know, yeah, we try to live it out every day. And I think for the first time in my coaching career over the last few years, the kids actually think and believe that we care about them because we don't run them into the ground and we don't keep them out there for hours and we give them the weekend off and we tell them to go home and sleep and all those different things and we cut out mindless things. You know, I think they see and understand that we think of them as people, and we don't just think of them as robots or part of our military or whatever you might say that I know we did in the past when we would, you know, try to give them as much, you know, hard stuff as we could to try to toughen them up. And I think that goes a long ways because our kids play extremely hard for us.
I'm sure some college coaches listening in there. Do you see a world in which this model could exist at the college level? I mean, that's more of a philosophical question. I mean, I know, you know, especially at the higher up levels, there's different staffing, but there's still guys putting in 60, 70, 80 hour weeks. I mean, do you see a world in which it's feasible, you know, with everything going on for that model to work at a successful level at the college level?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think there's staffs out there that mandate that Wednesday nights that are date nights and they're going to get in trouble if they're seen in the offices. You know, I think there's times of the year with recruiting and things like that where it gets extremely tough. You know, same thing with us. There's weeks at the high school level. We have a lower level game on Monday, a lower level game on Thursday, and then a varsity game on Friday. And then we may have a youth league thing or a flag football thing on Saturday that I should probably go to. And those things do happen, you know, but I think, you know, getting back to my college example where, you know, having a relationship with your assistants and asking them and asking for their input, hey, you know, we've put some late nights in here and, you know, how effective do you feel like you've been at those? You know, what can we do better? What can we cut out? And I think if those coaches would open themselves up to what their assistants are doing, they might learn that, hey, coach, we might be better off if we do this or that. You know, it's been done with Chip Kelly, obviously, with players and things like that. You know, there's a lot of people focusing on the speed aspect and monitoring their guys' reps and hooking them up to monitors and seeing these different things. And I think we're going to continue to see that. You know, I still see what I feel like way, way, way too many injuries and season-ending injuries, especially on the practice field. I think it's crazy the number of those, you know, teams that have, you know, 40% of the roster hurt or whatever. I think we need to do a better job in that area. But, you know, I think it will continue to progress, hopefully. You know, I think at the high school level it has to if we're going to save the game of football. You know, I think kids have to have a reason to play, you know, and it's not just so that you can become a tough person, whatever that means. And they have to know that you care about them when there's so many other different avenues that can take their time today. And I think kids still want to go out and play football, you know, but they don't want to go out and play for somebody that isn't going to, you know, care about them as a person or care about their time or be mindful of their health and things like that. And, you know, I think hopefully high school coaches can be kind of the model, you know, and I know if I was a college kid and, you know, I had an opportunity to go play for a coach that was going to, you know, be mindful of my time and put my health first and foremost and you know, those types of things, that's where I'd want to go. Same thing as an assistant coach. If I had the opportunity to do that, I'd want to go and be an assistant for somebody that was a family guy and recognize, you know, coach's time and family and things like that. And didn't just do something because the coach down the street was doing it or the other coach in the conference was. So, you know, I obviously there's a long ways to go, like I said, you know, because, you know, you got to win. If you're going to keep your job, you got to win, and you got to be willing to stand on, you know, your beliefs. And, you know, even when those go opposite of what the norm is or you know, whatever what else is doing. So I think it'll take a coach being extremely successful doing it to help others get on board for sure.
Question I always end with, as I talk to every coach, is, question I call victory formation. You know, when the outside world looks at a coach, they often get judged on the wins and losses or the accomplishments of their players. The legacy a coach can have on his players and his family can be much more lasting value than anything that can really be measured. What legacy or impact are you striving to create through coaching that you couldn't through any other profession?
Yeah, I think, you know, especially at the high school level, you think about, you get a kid that comes into your program as a freshman. You know, I think back to a situation I had, you know, in a year where I wouldn't say it was an average year, but it was a year, I think we were, you know, 8-3 or not, you know, 7-3, something like that, second round, you know, so not a state championship year or anything like that, but we had a huge win in week 9 over an undefeated team. It was a heck of a game, and we won. We made a big stop at the end, and we were happy. And obviously, as coaches, we were relieved that we had won. But I had a senior that he was crying, and he looked at me and said, "Coach, I have never cried happy tears in my entire life." And it just, I don't know if it hit me right at that moment or after the game or whatever, but I thought, holy cow, you know, we talk about these things. And we talk about, you know, building men off the field and doing all these things. And it's like, you know, this is why we do it. Yes, we won. We wanted to win. We wanted to be rolling going into the playoffs, you know, but in doing all those things and the preparation and the practice and all that, you know, I just helped, you know, to create a situation in a kid's life that he had never experienced for whatever reason. And, you know, so I think as a coach, whenever I am done, you know, I would hope my players would always know that I cared about them, whether they made a tackle or not, whether they had 100 yards rushing or not, and that they would know that, you know, whenever they needed something, that they could come calling on me, whether that was, you know, in school, whether that was 5 years after school, whether that was, you know, when they were 40 years old, whatever the scenario was, you know, that's kind of my hope, that, you know, that they will think enough that I've cared about them enough that they will continue to reach out to me. They will continue to stay in contact and continue to ask for guidance or help, you know, throughout the rest of their life. You know, they will bring their kids to see me or bring their kids out to practice or tell their kids about how much fun they had playing the game and how much they learned, and, you know, some of their lifelong buddies, you know, that they, relationships that they created in our program. And I think that's the biggest thing. And obviously, you know, create some lasting memories in their life that they'll never forget. Because I think, you know, like I said, I always ask the kids, you know, what was your record last year, JV level? Maybe one kid could tell you. What was your record in junior high? No kids can tell you. I said, you guys are going to forget about what the record was. You're going to forget about the score of these games and so forth. But you're going to remember, you know, the time that this kid made this huge hit and we all got jacked up, or we had this situation happen, this bus ride home, or you know, this summer retreat that we went on and all these things. And you're going to remember those memories. And that's what we hope to do. And along the way, obviously, we want to win and build excitement in our community. And, you know, and I feel like if we create those memories and we build up those people and, you know, we have those relationships, we're going to have a much better chance to put a good product on the field than if we focus on, you know, nothing but X's and O's and how we're going to win football games. You know, I think we should always win because of who we are and not really because of what we do.
Beautiful. Coach, how can more people, you know, connect with you on social media or learn maybe about Feed the Coaches or Feed the Cats?
My Twitter is probably the easiest way, at Coach B. Dixon. I try to respond to those. I don't always, you know, sometimes they get lost in the shuffle. I can be emailed at bdixon@cusd3.com as well. There's several videos out, clinics I've done. There's a couple on the TFC, Track Football Consortium website, that the presentations that I've given. I've given an online clinic on chiefpigskin.com, and there's several podcasts out there if you just search. It's a lot of the same things. You know, I don't claim to know everything, and like I say, what I say or what I've even said on this, you know, you have to adapt it. You know, use part of it, disagree with part of it, feel half of it, you know, whatever, but you've got to be able to believe in it, and you've got to be able to sell it to your kids, because when push comes to shove, it can't be mine, it's got to be yours. And that's kind of what we've done with Tony's, you know, Feed the Cats, and the, you know, the other different coaches that I've talked to, is we've tried to take parts of it, what fits our 1A program here in Illinois, what fits our kids and our coaches and our community, and it's always adapting. And so, you know, I think for the coaches out there that are listening, you know, that's the biggest takeaway. You've got to figure out what you like, what you don't like, what you can accept, what you can't, and then build from that and make it yours and make it your programs. And you know, if you have questions along the way or you want to tell me things that you figured out that work really well, you can reach me at those couple different ways, and I'll do my best to get back with you.
Coach, we appreciate your time, and best of luck in the future in all endeavors, and especially in this off season and the season to come.
Thank you very much. Had a blast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.